On the show today, shock value, which can include the irresistible desire to do something bad. And if we're going to talk about being bad, psychology professor Paul Bloom suggests that there's no better person to start with than the original bad boy, Saint Augustine.
So Augustine wrote a very famous book called The Confessions about 1600 years ago. And it's famous because it tells the story of his youthful descent into sin and his subsequent conversion to Christianity. And he begins book two with this great line.
I propose now to set down my past wickedness and a carnal corruption of my soul.
Which sounds like Augustine's about to dish out some pretty racy stuff, but...
The sin he spends the most time talking about is, you might think it's fairly mild.
There was a pear tree near our vineyard, weighed down with fruit, alluring neither in appearance nor in flavor.
And one day, 16-year-old Augustine and his buddies decided they were going to steal those pears.
And we carried off from there enormous loads of fruit, not to our meals, but rather to cast before swine.
And that was it.
That was it.
That was the beginning and the end of the sin. But it fascinated Augustine. Because he said, look, why did I do this?
Behold my heart, God. Behold my heart.
I wasn't hungry. I threw most of the pears to pigs. I had nothing against the person who owned the orchard. And he concluded that he did it because he had no motivation for wickedness except for wickedness itself.
If any part of one of those pears passed my lips, it was the sin that gave it flavor. I had no motivation for wickedness except wickedness itself. I was foul, and I loved it.
He wanted to do it simply because it was wrong. And unlike his sexual sins, where he had, you know, motivations, he had drives, he understood what he was up to, this fascinated and horrified him. This seemed to him like a glimmer of pure evil.
Paul loves stories like these.
I love it because it's so paradoxical.
Because sure, we sometimes do bad things because we think that we're actually in the right, that morality is on our side. We fight back because we're overwhelmed with anger at injustice or because we want to get revenge against someone who's wronged us. Usually we have some sort of reason. But stealing pears just for the hell of it?
These perverse acts fall outside all of that.
Perverse, as in illogical, irrational.
They seem to be cases where people know something is wrong and they do it, not despite the fact that it's wrong, but because it's wrong.
So in an attempt to understand what drives us to do these thoroughly unhelpful acts, Paul launched the Perversity Project, where he asked people to submit their everyday examples of doing wrong just for the sake of it.
So one of the first stories I got was, flirted with a woman's boyfriend knowing fully well he liked me. I knew I could steal him if I wanted, but I didn't want to do that. I just wanted her to feel uncomfortable whenever the three of us were in the same room.
Here's Paul Bloom on the TED stage.
Causing people pain is wrong, but that's exactly why I did it. And in fact, this is the plot of the Dolly Parton song, Jolene. Sometimes it's self-destructive. A young man wrote to me, ice skating on a pond, dark and frozen spot 30 yards out. Instead of avoiding it, I skate towards it, knowing but wondering, and splash. But not all the stories I got had that kind of nature. Some were a little bit more benign. Here's one of my favorites. When I was in a professional choir, at every concert, I felt the desire to sing a few notes very incorrectly on purpose. To this day, I don't completely understand why. Someone else wrote me, and this is going to be the sweetest, saddest little example of modest perversity. Sometimes I walk on the grass instead of the path just because I know it's wrong.
You know, I think my favorite from your survey is the ice cream guy. You remember that one?
Oh, this was, I think, the first entry I got from the Perversity Project.
You hit the jackpot right from the start.
I just loved it. And he wrote, on one occasion in my early 20s, I was out with a friend. He decided to get himself ice cream. And before he had a chance to try it, I stuck my finger in it. I played it off as a joke. But really, I had the sudden thought, man, it would be messed up if I just jam my finger in his ice cream. and for full clarity, he didn't use the word messed up.
I mean, there's something about a person who decides to give you an entry for your perversity project that they have a sort of self-appreciation or they're trying to understand their own motivation. It does not pass them by that something wicked was within them or they wanted to shock someone. They know themselves well enough to have recognized that this was what was happening when they committed these acts.
I think that's exactly right. It is the kind of sweet spot where people know this is strange. This is outside of the usual. And a lot of the perversity examples that we could talk about don't make sense to the person doing them. And one of the theories that I'm interested in for why we do this, which is to shock others, to shock and scare and impress others. In a nice way, you just want to surprise or sometimes amuse other people. It could be funny.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, in the extremes, perversity becomes terrible. It becomes people doing cruel, rotten, violent things simply, you know, for the sake of doing them.
Psychologists have long been interested in violent, disruptive, perverse acts and the kinds of people who do them. An example people often give is the Joker from the Batman comics. In Christopher Nolan's film The Dark Knight, Alfred, Batman's butler, describes the Joker by saying, "Some men can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn." And psychologists have thought up a need for chaos scale. That gives you a bunch of statements, and how much you agree with them will tell you how much you want to watch the world burn. So just do this quietly in your head. I need chaos around me. It's too boring if nothing is going on. Sometimes I just like destroying beautiful things.
I've spent, back in the day, covering a lot of political protests, and oftentimes we saw that they would be completely nonviolent and rational. And then you would see the anarchists show up in black hoods, and things would just descend into utter chaos, not because they felt strongly for either side of the issue that people were protesting, but because they just wanted to mess things up.
Yeah. And I think there you see the dark side of perversity, where there are some people around who just want to make trouble. And sometimes the making trouble can be funny. They may want to amuse people or surprise people in a benign way. But sometimes they might really want to hurt people. They might want to destroy things and hurt people. And there's something apolitical about it. You know, they'll dress up, they'll put on masks. And at root, they don't care what the demonstration is about.
No.
But if they could throw some rocks and get some trouble going, their day is done. They tend to be male. They tend to be young. I think many people age out of it. It's kind of in a sort of hormonal rage of being a teenager. But it is the scary side of perversity. And then there's another side, which I think is more common and something really worth knowing, which also connects to politics, where people don't like being told what to do. Part of a perverse actor is somebody who wants to maintain their autonomy. They want to maintain their freedom. And there's a lot of evidence that if you tell people, look, you are forbidden to smoke. Look, you must take these vaccines. Look, anybody who votes for this person is a total moron. Don't vote for this person. Some proportions say, okay, I'll do what you tell me to. And some proportions say, the hell with that. I'm going to do the opposite. And I think political scientists underestimate how often people go to the polls and do what they are told not to do just because they are told not to do it.
Okay, so these acts can be troublesome, but you also think that they can be pretty interesting, maybe even positive. And you use the example of the art world and certain pieces of art.
Yes. Maybe the newest one was by Banksy.
Yeah, we had a lot of interest on it, as you can imagine.
Where he had a canvas girl with a balloon. It was on auction at Sotheby's. It was all set up in a frame.
$800,000.
And then the moment the gavel went down, a machine in the frame started to activate, and the artwork was partially shredded. And if you go to YouTube and you watch it, people are shocked. They had never seen anything like it. They're horrified. But this became a classic, and people thought it was wonderful and ingenious and clever. Maybe the origin of modern art started when Marcel Duchamp, when there was an art competition in New York, and they said, send in any artwork you want. So he sent in a urinal. And they said, no, we're not accepting that. We're talking about art. And he said, it is art. And there's a big debate. And then the conception of what art is changed.
Yeah.
I think society and science and art wouldn't work unless most people play by the rules. But these geniuses, who are often weird people and often perverse in other ways as well, make things more interesting. They push us to different levels.
When we return, Paul explains why telling someone not to do something will just make them want to do it even more. On the show today, Shock Value. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Stay tuned. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. And on the show today, Shock Value. We were just talking to psychology professor Paul Bloom, who is endlessly fascinated with what he calls acts of perversity. Basically, being bad just because you can.
Edgar Allan Poe, describing perversity, talked about imps, little magical demons in our heads that cause us to do terrible things. But like I said, I'm a psychologist. I don't believe in imps. I think what we do has reasons, has motivations. And I think for perverse actions, there's a range of them. One of them was mentioned by Augustine. So later on, after describing the incident with the pears, he writes, I would not have done it by myself. My satisfaction did not lie in the pears, it lay in the crime itself committed in league with a gang of sinners. The social force drove him.
A warning for parents tonight. The Tide Pod Challenge is the latest fad among teens.
Jonah Berger gives this great example of the Tide Pod Challenge, where it was a few years ago, kids would just like be sticking Tide Pods in their mouth and filming it.
I mean, this is nothing to laugh at. It's no joke.
Well, they do look yummy. I understand.
This can cause serious health problems.
We are going to get legal problems.
Yeah, let's not
problems.
Do that. You're right.
We should really say it is not safe to put Tide Pods in your mouth.
No.
But actually, maybe we shouldn't say this because the company that owned Tide Pods, I think Procter & Gamble, put up some extremely expensive ads.
Keep laundry packs out of reach and away from children.
Berger points out when this ad came up, consumption of the pods shot up, not down. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. I'm going to be an autonomous free being. Or take threats of reprisal. There's a lovely study by a team of political scientists which asked the subjects to imagine that they're an ambassador to a country and they're deciding whether or not to have sanctions towards that country. In one condition, the dictator says, if you do sanctions towards our country, that's okay, I won't do anything. In the second condition, the dictator says, if you do sanctions towards our country, I will unleash terrorist attacks against you. What's the stunning finding from this is that in the second condition, not the first, they were more likely to do it. A lot of our perverse actions are in response to people telling us not to do what we want to do. And it makes us want all the more to do that thing.
So much of global conflict involves sending off a message saying, don't expect me to be reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Don't expect me to only care about my own best interests. And people talk about the evolution of our minds, the evolution of emotions, say, this is where emotions like losing your temper, like rage, come from. Rage is an honest signal that I am about to make threats that are not reasonable, but nonetheless, I'm going to follow up on. It's one of the great quirks in human interaction that a perfectly rational being, a perfectly intelligent, rational being who weighs the cost and benefits, a Mr. Spock, is going to be less effective at life than someone who's a little bit crazy. And we're being grim. But it also works for positive things too. Who would you find most compelling? Somebody who says to you, I want to be with you, I want to spend the rest of my life with you, because the benefits of being with you outweigh the costs. You are the most attractive, promising mate I have seen based on searching for last little while. And up until I find somebody better than you, I will stick with you. Or would you rather have somebody who's sobbing at your feet and said, I am so crazy in love with you. I will never leave you. You are the one for me. And now the second person isn't thinking rationally. You know, dude, cost benefits. But he's much more making a much more compelling deal. Love is basically a sort of irrational bet that when somebody better comes along, you're not going to stray.
Human relations, we are so weird and complicated and strange and delightful.
We are perverse.
That's Paul Bloom. He's a psychology professor at the University of Toronto and professor emeritus at Yale University. His latest book is Psych, The Story of the Human Mind. You can see his talks at TED.com. And thank you so much to J.C. Howard for giving voice to St. Augustine.